Hello, hello, and welcome to the CVETS podcast. We're your hosts, Regina Piltz.
And Ruben Cervantes.
And if you were with us last week, you would have met this beautiful host, Kirsten Bowden, who helped us kind of start to unpack kind of just what's been happening recently with some of this ethnic hostility that's been going on and how to respond to that from our own heart, from how the church needs to respond. And so today's episode, episode 56, is an epic title, which I just forgot because I'm pregnant. What is it, Ruben?
Help us out, Dave.
It's the controversy of justice in a flashpoint moment.
Exactly. And you know, the reason, kind of surprise, cat's out of the bag, Dave's with us today.
Yes. Welcome, Dave.
He's going to help us navigate this conversation. And to be honest, I mean, you guys have been following us, majority of our audience, you guys have been with us for a while. And you know that you know, our heart and our focus is we want to empower the church to understand, to live, and to share this gospel message, the gospel of the kingdom. And that's always been our focus. And right now we're in a flashpoint moment that has really silenced the church. And in some ways that's good, in some ways that's bad. And I want to talk about that today. But it really shocked us of how unprepared we are for some of the things we know are coming in the future with this national crisis that we're experiencing related to this ethnic hostility. And so, because of your work, Dave, and some of the conversations we've already had, we're so grateful that you're able to come and help enlighten us on this issue. It's really, really hard to talk about. I mean, no matter what you say, you're saying it wrong, it feels. And so what I'm wanting to understand, and I'm asking you this as a friend, what is the voice of the church? Like, what is our message when times like these emerge? You know, and that's kind of where I want to, that's my personal agenda. But I do want to make sure that we understand the controversy of not injustice, but controversy of justice during times like this. So let's jump right in.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I love what you're saying, Ruben, but even one of the main things we spoke about with Kirsten was how so many people, and I'll talked about myself specifically, I don't know what to say at these times. And so that can end up just freezing you and causing you to be silent, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but even not even knowing how to start a conversation rightly. And so jump in and just tell us what to do.
Yeah, I think the first thing I'll say to that point specifically is I would refer you, and we don't do many commercials here for our stuff, but I would advertise what we just released on Wednesday night, Now with Mike Bickle. It was myself, it was Stuart, it was Mike. Answering that very question, that was the key question. There were two, which was, number one, how do we talk about this? And number two, how does this get solved? Right. And what solutions are realistic in this age? What's going to happen, you know, in the age to come? We don't like any of that. Mm-hmm. There's just, and really, even your question, what's the message of the church? Point one, just let's acknowledge the big elephant in the room. We're having a conversation about race, black and white conflict, and the flashpoint, which is the issue of the abuse of power from a police side against, historically, against the black American, which isn't a last 5 years issue. It's not even going back to 1968. The issue of the abuse of power as it relates to the black man, that we could go back to post Reconstruction, you know, post-Civil War, Reconstructionist America, the black man trying to find his place in American society in a post-slavery context, and everything that happened to try to keep the black man. It's like, okay, legally you're now free, but we're still going to try to make you as powerless as possible. And the abuse of power from that point forward, I mean, we could talk about that. There's so many things to talk about, but the biggest thing we need to address on the front end is none of us are black. And so people watching this are immediately, we think, okay, where's the black person that's going to talk about this? And is this, you know, are there three privileged people that are having a theoretical conversation? Even though, I mean, three quarters of this group is not white, it's still kind of hard. Not only is it hard to talk about, it's hard to listen to. It's like you have to have your quota. You got to have at least 1 to 2 black people in the conversation for it to even be legit.
Well, and I've even heard that some black men and women who are married to white men or women, like they feel like they're not allowed to talk about it because, oh no, that's just because you're married to a white girl. You know, that's why you're talking like that. You know, so it's not just that we don't have that. It's like there's always a reason why if you disagree with me, you're disqualified
there's
from having a
there's
voice.
There's a checklist of qualifications that have to be hit before I'll even listen to you. Wow. And so in that, there might be some folks that tune out within the first, you know, 2 minutes of this thing because we don't fit the qualifications. And that's fine. But I am qualified to talk about the Word of God. And so that's... Really, I wanted to note that, hey, we're aware.
Yeah.
We understand that it's not only is it not comfortable to talk about this subject, it's not comfortable unless we have our black friend with us.
Right.
And so we're just so conceptual as a people. We want to talk about the black issue, but we don't want to have a black couple over for dinner and be their friend. So side note, so what's the message of the hour? The message of the hour, going back to that question. That's the problem. The problem is the Bible doesn't say have a message in a flashpoint moment. The Bible says very opposite things that we don't like. You know, these flashpoint moments, you're not really asking the question from a biblical perspective. You're asking it from an American cultural Christian perspective.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so the American issue is I got to have something to say.
Yeah, because the loudness of the noise out there is begging people like me to say something. And I'm restraining because I don't know what to say. And I think that if I say anything, it'd just be dumb, honestly. Now, that doesn't mean I don't talk to my friends, my black friends who are suffering. Hey, tell me, how are you doing? I know you're in pain. That's different. I'm talking about our social, almost like we have this mandated social responsibility to choose a side on social media.
Right.
And I don't want to right now. I'm like, God, give me your heart. I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I'm even more, I have more of an attitude than that. Not only will I not choose a side, I'm not going to be bullied. Like that, there's an intensity related to this that wants to pressure me. And there's lots of reasons for it. And I understand many of the reasons, good for good and for bad. So let's talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's go there. So the issue of social responsibility, say something, use your platform. Again, part of it is American. In America now, in particularly 21st century social media driven America, now everybody has a platform. Mm-hmm. You know, back in the day, it is true. People in positions of influence as it relates to pastoral and teaching, as it relates to serving a people, to love well. In other words, there's things that the church needs to do in these kinds of moments. And so a pastor or a teacher in a local congregation does need to use their platform to serve their people, mm-hmm. the sphere of influence that God gave them to equip that people to engage well as salt and light in a difficult context. And so yes, there is an appropriate place for the church to use its voice, but throughout the New Testament, the way that voice is used from Paul's perspective is within the family. Paul would say it. He'd say, in essence, in Corinthians, he's going, we're having a family conversation. What have I to say to the unbeliever right now? We're having a family conversation, and I, as an apostle, want to work with the shepherds and the elders to equip the family to do the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, that's the quickest summary I can think of, or else this would be a 20-part series.
Yeah.
You just see throughout the New Testament, they're constantly equipping the sphere that God has given them, mm-hmm. to do the Sermon on the Mount, to express Jesus to a really confused, broken, hurting world.
Right.
That, in that context, was under massive Roman oppression with great injustice related to Roman abuse of power. I mean, the things that Pilate did, the things that the Roman governors did, the things that they did in the name of Caesar in order to intimidate and keep power were wicked and demonic. And so it's in the midst of this context that Paul's not looking to raise his voice for the cause of all Roman and Jewish oppressed. Paul's looking to equip his people to do the Sermon on the Mount because the New Testament church under apostolic leadership was committed to Jesus' justice plan. And that's the issue. We don't know Jesus' justice plan. We're not really that committed to it. We don't have a lot of depth and confidence in the Word, and so we become a hostage to the moment.
Right.
And lacking the knowledge of what to say and how to respond from the Bible, we go with whatever wisdom will alleviate the immediate pressure so that I don't have to feel bad and dumb and We're just trying to alleviate the pressure of the moment. We're not even trying to serve our black friend. We're not even trying to serve the black community. We're trying to serve our own fear of looking dumb or looking racist or having the wrong answer or being perceived a certain way. Again, if you want to serve, if you really want to serve the black community, you know, throwing some black on your social media feed is probably the most empty thing you could ever do. Yeah. But so many activist gestures are empty gestures. The New Testament church does salt and light by pastors equipping their people to host a black man and woman for dinner and be their friend and actually say, how can we love and serve you right now?
Yeah.
How can we help you right now? Like, we have this zeal because of the illusion of social media to go shout to the rooftop something profound and awesome so that people see that we are virtuous. Now, I don't want to display our virtuous wisdom to the folks that are bugged. I want to actually go find my friend and have him for lunch and bless his wife and play with his kids. Like, I want to, the church right now is meant to be a safe place of refuge and friendship and fellowship as we connect and strengthen one another and encourage one another. There's really practical things we can do.
Yeah.
And again, using our voice to equip our people to do practical works of love is the most practical expression of justice there is, but that's just not how America works.
Yeah.
We got to have an ideological, you know, shout that agrees with the cultural narrative. And it, you know, and there's, I mean, every time I post, every time I say anything, and every time I say anything on social media, and it's so confusing to people, every time I say anything, I'm doing the Pauline thing. I'm doing the New Testament thing. I'm thinking about my friends, and I'm wanting to use my platform to equip them to love well. That's all I'm ever trying to do.
Right.
I'm not trying to make a statement. I'm not trying to represent IHOP. I'm not trying to be this bold, prophetic voice. What I say may have a prophetic spirit on it. I don't know. I'm just trying to be a shepherd and a friend to serve my friends, to serve their friends. That's all I'm trying to do. I don't have these delusions of grandeur that we get. Even this platform. I love this platform. Mm-hmm. It's not that big. It's not that big a deal. And not much is going to change because we did this. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. The problem is we're not really bought into Jesus' justice plan because we're not bought into his way of doing it, which we should talk about. But we are bought into the illusion of justice in a modern context related to the illusion of power, or not even the illusion of power, actual but small expressions of power that do make their own kind of incremental changes in the moment, but they don't bring justice, they bring catharsis. And by catharsis, what I mean is the emotional release of gratification. It's like when you watch a movie and the bad guy does something just wrong, but at the end, he gets his.
Right.
That you feel the catharsis, the release of, yeah, it's not justice, it's vengeance. It's not justice, it's, you know, the cop that wronged the guy. There's so many stories. And when you hear the stories, when you actually talk to your friends and hear what's happened to them by you know, a few bad apples. And again, we don't want to criminalize or demonize the entire police force of America, but we do want to recognize that men are broken, and when you give broken men power, they do broken things with that power. Mm-hmm. And so then the stories you hear are infuriating. They are. You just hear them, and you're like, ah! I just heard one on the way over. Just, I heard the story of a black man coming out of a store, and the cop starts harassing him, and his white friend sits in the truck, his coworker. Could have cleared up the confusion in a minute, stayed in the truck. Oh. The cop dehumanizes and humiliates him, throws his ID on the ground, tells him to go get it. He's embarrassed. He's mad at his friend. You hear stories like that, you go, that is wrong. It is. Yeah. But we don't want justice. We want catharsis. We want that cop to pay. We want that friend to pay. You know, it's like we want, there's something in the human heart that would settle for catharsis when we can't get societal change. And we don't like Jesus' answer. We don't, because Jesus' answer of go low, bless your enemy, forgive, serve that guy, pray for that cop, pray for your friend, love him, forgive him, see the bigger picture of who he is. Don't just view him in his failure in the moment. Don't just view him in his failure of the moment, but have a heart of mercy, have a heart of tenderness. really go the way of Jesus with meekness, restraint, prayer, serving. Engage your friends to be salt and light, display the love of Jesus. Go the low way, go the long way, go the slow way. We don't want any of those answers. We don't like any of those answers. That is wrong. Say that it's wrong. Use your platform to show that you're on our side. Your silence is complicit. You're agreeing with that cop if you don't talk. You just made that up. Like, that's not true. Though I get that there were times in the 60s, and I get that there are times in systemic, horrific injustice where people are taking the cowardly way. You know, that's why that man was mad at his coworker. It feels cowardly to sit in the truck and do nothing. I get that. There are practical acts of love and service that we can do. That man should have gotten out of the truck. But that man needs more than a lesson in the moment. And he's a pastor to help him. You know, it's right. Like, we need discipleship. We need pastoring. We need serving. We need mercy and tenderness. There's about 50 things we need. But in the moment, the angry, pained human heart wants one thing.
Yeah. Right.
The one in power to use their power to alleviate my situation.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way. And so this is a huge subject.
Yeah.
Huge subject. But the issue is there's something that the human heart wants in the moment. To simplify it, mm-hmm. that is different than what God's heart wants in the moment.
Yeah.
And we haven't reconciled the two, and we're hostage to what that human heart wants because it sounds like a slightly better moral answer than what that guy's heart
right.
wants.
Yeah, I love the way you're distinguishing justice from catharsis. I mean, catharsis is a big term. But just the way that you defined it very simply, you know, is helpful because... You know, one of the things that I was having a conversation with a group of pastors that we were meeting about this issue, and I made this phrase probably misinformed, but you know, we have messy words right now when we don't understand how to approach something. But I said, I don't. What are we gonna do? Like, can we really change the systemic ethnic hostility that's in our nation? Like, as gospel messengers, isn't our role to preach the gospel? And I know it sounded so simple, and actually it created a little bit of a stir in our conversation, but I was just like, here's the deal. At the end of the day, when I read Jesus say, go the extra mile, that's injustice, you know? The law was, you can do whatever I tell you as a soldier, now take my stuff for a mile. And Jesus is telling them, go too. Or the injustice of, you know, they take away my coat, right? And Jesus says, well, give them your cloak as well. Like, when I think of Sermon on the Mount, I think it's so offensive in times like these. You know, it's like, wait a minute. No, I deserve. And you would never say that in a context unlike this one. You know, like in America, the gift of our rights and our liberties has given us this illusion, this idea that we have fundamental rights. You know, I mean, the whole.
I'll say this. I'll jump on that team, though. We do have the argument of natural rights. Those natural rights were derived from a biblical paradigm by which the idea was there were rights that were bestowed unto men that government cannot bestow. They transcend government. They're God-given rights. And really, it's God-given dignity. And that's the reason that's important is because the issue of racism is the removal of dignity. It's the way in which the individual is lumped into a stereotypical collective.
Oh, that's good.
He loses his personal identity. He loses his individual dignity before a maker, and he gets lost in the collective and categorized.
Right.
And so we don't want to lose the concept of natural rights and how those informed kind of modern law. There is a measure of, in one sense, available biblical justice in our context because there were some ideas that were derived biblically and applied, and it was the manner in which guys thought our government is not the final answer on the rights of man. There's a higher law and higher dignity and rights that we have to actually honor. So that is true. There is something to that. Now,
no, and I appreciate that because personally, like, I'm grateful that I don't have to have bars over my windows. I don't have to, you know, like, there's a level of rule of law, like, because in Mexico where my family's, you know, a lot of my cousins and uncles are at.
Wait, let me finish. So my point being, we I want to have gratitude for a biblical paradigm for natural rights, but we have to have the whole biblical paradigm. The whole biblical paradigm is God gives me, there's natural rights and dignity that God bestows on my life, and so now I have this ultimate right before the Lord, a sovereign God called free will. That's huge. Like, that's the ultimate, that I have choice. That's dignity. That I can choose to go right or left. I have a dignity as a human being. You had the dignity, this is a dumb example, but you had the dignity of choosing that shirt this morning. God didn't choose it for you. God gave you the money to buy that shirt, but you picked that one. And the measure by which you have the autonomy and the freedom to make those kinds of choices is a dignity that God's bestowed on you. And so that's what Americans are really big on. That's what you're hitting. Where I'm getting to is where we have to keep going biblically is the reason that God gave us that autonomy, that we would freely choose to use that autonomy to give up that autonomy. Like, that's right. That's the ultimate expression of biblical love that looks like Jesus. Yeah. Greater love has no man than this. To do what? To lay down his life for a friend. In other words, that autonomy and dignity, that the rights that I've been given, we can go two ways. The American way that you're hitting is to use my rights to advance me.
Right.
The Jesus way is to give up my rights to advance you. And that's the core of the Sermon on the Mount in biblical justice, is that I do have autonomy, I do have freedom, I do have liberty, but I willingly and continually seek to give up my liberty to advance and to serve someone else. And Jesus calls that love.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously in this situation, it's quite complicated. I mean, when I try to apply that to my friends who, you know, are afraid, they're trying to figure out how do they move forward. I mean, some of them in particular that I've speaking with, it's like, I don't want to be perceived to be like, as you mentioned, like I've already been robbed of my dignity no matter what I do, you know, whether you're white or black or like me, you're brown or you're Asian, like there's already a perception. Either you're on one side or you're on the other. And if you're silent, then you're on that one side.
Right. Yeah, but the Lord says there's nobody more misunderstood and wrongly perceived than me. Join the team. I left Israel in slavery for 400 years before I liberated them.
Yeah.
Because I have a way of liberating captives that is not your way, and I'm not going to do it your way. I'm going to raise up a Moses, but finding a Moses and raising up a Moses takes time. I'm not going to do it your way, because your way would have you back in captivity in seconds.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to do it my way. When I liberate captives, I might take a while, but they stay liberated.
Come on.
And so the issue of God's way, what accompanies God's way is the accusation against God related to that way. Because Isaiah 42 is really clear. I am not going to do justice a certain way. I am going to do it this way. I'm not going to raise up my voice in the street. I'm not going to call attention to my cause. I'm not going to call attention to your cause. Wait, what? I'm not going to call attention to your cause. I'm not going to bring forth justice the way you want. He will not cry out. He will not raise his voice. He will not cause his voice to be heard in the street. That's Isaiah 42, verse 2. He is already, in an American context, one of the most offensive figures possible because he has all the power. Because that's the issue. Reuben, you have power.
Use it for me.
You have influence. Right. Why aren't you using that power on my behalf? Why are you being cowardly and staying in the background and not jumping on my team? And what's hard, because there's nuance there as it relates to the cultural conversation, is I actually am using my power in your favor in a way you'll thank me for forever if you get saved. Because you'll see, like, this is the statement of my life, your life, your life, your life, and many watching, this is the problem. There's going to be, I'm very confident in it, a vindication of my life in the age to come. I'm not seeking that vindication now, I'm trying to obey now. Obey now, get vindicated later. But what's the vindication? When my life is defined at the end of all things, you know, when we come to it, my life will be defined by Jesus as a life that was given to the cause of justice. Like, the justice focus of my life, it will be vindicated. It will. But the problem is that's not so evident right now. Like, people would look at me and go, wait, your whole life is about justice? Yeah, what do you think I'm doing down in that prayer room night and day? What am I doing there?
Yeah.
There, it's not, if I didn't care, I wouldn't go to that prayer room. If I didn't want to use my power to serve you, I wouldn't get on that prayer mic and cry out. If I didn't actually have compassion and empathy and a zeal to see you liberated and to see you receive the full dignity before the Lord of who you are and who you were made to be, not just as a black man or a black woman or an Asian man or a Latino man. The issue is, you're more than that, but the issue is, if I didn't have that burden, I'm not exercising faith in my free will to lay down what I want to go do, to go to a prayer meeting to cry out. That's one of the most profound expressions of justice in the Bible.
Yeah.
But in this hour, it doesn't count. It doesn't count unless it's what we opened the show with. Mm-hmm. This conversation doesn't count if it doesn't check these boxes, and your expression of justice doesn't count if it doesn't fit in these categories.
Wow.
The body of Christ needs to lock in to how Jesus defines justice and how we express it in love,
yeah,
and just go there and drown out the voices that want to define who you are. We've got to be defined by Jesus. We have to be defined and aligned with his heart. We have to lock into that without fear, and we can't be bullied into, to use a kind of family way of saying it, we can't be bullied out of the stream.
Yeah.
By the rabid dogs that are so in the moment with anger and rage. I'm not calling a black man who's angry a rabid dog. I'm talking about the people that are specifically in your life. I don't care what color they are, that want to get you out of your assignment,
yeah,
get you out of the Bible, get you out of the biblical narrative and into theirs. I don't care who that is.
Yeah.
It's there's a almost kind of rabid anger that animates the soul when it's powerless and it perceives that you have a measure of power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, I do have power. I'm just talking to the one with all the power.
Well, and that's, mm-hmm, that's it. I mean, when we pray, we have authority in the spirit, because it's basically us saying, okay, I don't have power to change things, but you do.
Yeah.
So I'm going to pray to you. And obviously you love this world more than we do. You love every ethnic group more than we do. You love justice more than we do. So God, do it. We agree with your justice, but we don't understand his justice, mm-hmm, but we can still agree with it. And could you define justice like in a sentence? Because you've been talking about, you know, 'cause when I think about, you know, a cop getting arrested for such mistreatment, I could see how that could be a definition of justice. You know, oh, there was justice there.
Justice is setting things right.
Right. And
according to the, you know, it's the balancing of the scales, to use modern language, but it's the setting things right according to God's definition of right.
There you go.
That's that we have to have some kind of moral baseline that we're operating from. So when we see and define something as injustice, we're saying it should be this way, but it's not.
Yeah.
A police officer should be using their power to protect and serve, but they're not. They're misusing their power to abuse and bully. That is wrong. Justice is setting that right.
Yeah.
Whether it's calling that police officer to account, holding him accountable in a way that causes others to come into alignment with the mission, that's justice. Setting it right, or setting it as it ought to be from a moral baseline, and in our context, that moral baseline defined by God.
Yeah.
If we're godless, then the moral baseline is set by the collective. It's set
right
by the nation as it establishes its laws, mm-hmm, but there's still a moral baseline.
Yeah.
I think what's been going on in my mind right now is how time and time again it says we are, like, as a Christian, like, they hated Christ and they're going to hate us. And I think as we see this conflict arising, and it's been on the field for years and years, centuries, but it's going to continue to increase. And I think one of the things we have to realize as Christians is we are going to be ostracized no matter what we do come the end of the day. If I say, yes, I will stand and fight with my black brothers and sisters, well, then the whites will look at us. I'm being very whatever, but
neutral.
Yeah. Well, no. It's like, if I stand with my black brothers and sisters, the white people would be like, why, you agree with everything that they do, everything that they've done wrong. And then if I stand with my Jewish brothers and sisters, oh, okay, so you see that Israel's bombing this place and this place, and you're standing
with them. What about the Palestinians?
Yeah, and so it's like...
I've had that discussion many times.
Right, and so it's whoever and however we try and stand with our brothers and sisters, Christians, who I'm talking to them and nobody else, we're going to be completely ostracized and completely misunderstood.
Well, it's because I'm not standing with Israel or my right. black brothers and sisters primarily. I'm standing with Jesus.
Right. Yeah.
And then from there, I'm serving and loving, but I stand with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that's the confusion. The confusion is we find safety and we find comfort. We draw courage from our, this is a big term, from our philosophical associations. Mm-hmm. In other words, just look at it. Look at the polarization. And look what happens when someone says something that fits the camp that I find safety in. Boom, we're just blasting that out. And then when somebody like me comes along and goes, hey, Bible verse, the right. answer so many give me is, watch this video, listen to this person, here, listen to this, hear this, read this. They just want to throw resource at me yeah. from the ideological camp they find safety in.
Well, yeah it's because our experience or the experiences that we have seem to have a kind of superiority to the ancient texts.
Right.
Like, it's like, well, okay, that's whatever, but this is what's really true.
Right.
Is what I've been feeling. And that's honestly why I wanted you to come in, Dave, because I don't feel safe with this shifting sand of the new issues constantly, defining how our world should be. But when, and I feel such safety in the scriptures, but it's like we're not allowed to, you know, mm-hmm. in this context. But I just love the way that you're calling us. I think your phrase was to lock in to these ancient truths and not move from them regardless of what storms around us.
Yeah.
We got to check Jesus's boxes. Because again, yeah. it's the, do we check the boxes to be able to have this conversation? Nope. Do you check the boxes to be viewed as authentic by one side or the other? And again, we could say there's the All Lives Matter group and there's the Black Lives Matter group. And again, I love people from both groups, and both groups track with IHOP, to people in both groups, and I get beat on by both groups when I say stuff, and so I, you know who you are out there. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I love you all, but I'm not answering to any of you.
Right.
There's a judgment seat that none of you are going to be sitting on, and that's the only one I care about, and so, therefore, the boxes I got to check, for real, if I really say I'm a man about justice, if I really say I'm a man about racial reconciliation, the real kind, not the ceremonial kind where I cry mm-hmm. and apologize and put a black thing on my on my Instagram, if I'm really going to be about it in a way that really matters in light of now and then, because it's not just pray, because pray sounds passive to people, and Jesus goes, no, the way that I'm going to do justice now, because that's the big question everybody has. Okay, prayer in Isaiah 42 is justice at the second coming, but what about now? Right. Okay, Jesus addressed that too. Between now and then, here's how we do justice as a church. Number one, we've got to get out of our delusion of grandeur that my life is so big and the impact right. is so massive. The impact is real, the things that people do, the activism, the changing of the laws, the protest, the fact that there are video cameras now videoing police brutality that's causing it to be dealt with. Now, I want to acknowledge those are very real expressions of incremental justice that have expressions of power attached to it that do matter. And so I don't want to dismiss all of that.
Yeah.
It's just that Jesus said, if you want the kind that I'm after, that really takes us to where we need to go, the kind that is the kind, there's a kind of justice that culminates in the second coming. There's a kind of justice that can change laws for a season, but it never deals with the sin problem or the demon problem. Or there's the kind of justice that culminates in my return, Psalm 2, good news for the earth, setting things right, removing the unworthy kings, and making this thing right forever. I mean, which one do you want? It's not that this one doesn't matter. It's just that ultimately, there's a solution.
Yeah.
So if you want to engage in mine, here's the boxes you need to check. You really need to get over yourself.
Yeah.
And you need to pray. But you also need to fast. Fasting has justice associated with it in the scriptures.
Yeah.
You need to fast. Like if you care about justice, you'll fast. Because when you fast, you're going to accelerate something. And I'll talk about what that something is in a second. He goes, but there's also some active, those are active in relationship to me. And those have justice dynamics It's acknowledging that justice begins in your own soul. It's right. not it's not denouncing the racists. It's going, Lord, what's in me that hates my brother? Let's start with me. Then number three, I'm going to serve my way out of this. I'm going to forgive my way out of this. So I'm going to pray. I'm going to fast. I'm going to serve. I'm going to forgive. I'm going to bless my enemies.
Wow.
I'm going to deal with the justice issues in me. I'm going to do that with a spiritual family and community. We're going to do that together. We're going to actively serve, actively bless, actively pray, actively fast. We're going to do it together. We do these things together. There's a catalytic dimension by which Jesus, it's not just the coming of Jesus then, it's the coming of Jesus in a small way right. now mm-hmm. that sets a community right.
Yes.
And revival comes. That's an expression of justice. I don't just want the second coming. I'm not just doing passivity until Jesus does stuff. I'm engaging in his way to bring him into the justice drama. Mm-hmm. That's his plan. Bring me into this. Stop trying to figure out the right thing to say or the right thing to do or the right way to manage your reputation or the right way to make sure that your black friend knows that you're on their team.
Right.
Bring me into this. Everything about the Sermon on the Mount, everything about Isaiah 42, everything about his justice plan is about bring me in yeah. little ways now so that you can bring me in the cosmic way later, but yeah. it's all about me. The more right. me, Jesus says, in the midst, the more justice you will have.
Oh, come that's on. So good. I think having those four practical points is so helpful and beneficial. And I think, too, it's not only about doing them in this flashpoint moment, it's actually having it as your lifestyle so that there is a change come the end. It's like, yeah, go put that black sticker on your Instagram if you want, but if that doesn't change your heart posture and your actions,
if you
then what's
change
the point?
A law, but you don't bring Jesus into it.
Yeah.
It's Ecclesiastes, it's futile.
Yeah.
It's empty. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it.
Yeah.
Unless you build your life on my words, it's sand when the storm comes. Mm-hmm. Matthew 7. That's what the American church is hitting right now in the storm.
Yeah.
That's what you're feeling.
Yeah.
I built my life on sand more than I want to admit.
Yeah.
I built my life on a foundation of sand. But Jesus goes, justice begins with you seeing and acknowledging that, not with you waving your virtue flag and showing everybody how moral you are.
Right. Dang. Thanks, Dave.
that's a bomb, but it's so true.
Oh, it's so true. These are all so provoking and... What is my heart attitude? How am I acting and responding right now?
Pray.
Thanks for joining us.
Fast. Serve.
Give. Give money.
Forgive. Give money. Oh, there was one more.
It's five. Oh. It's the Sermon on the Mount.
Yeah.
Yeah, just Matthew 5, 6, and 7.
There you go.
No, thank you. This has been very good. Yeah. I know very hard words to say in a time like this, but again, if we want to have steady grounding in how to pursue true justice, mm-hmm. we stay committed, locked in, as you said, on the scriptures, the ancient truths found in his word. And I more than ever feel that courage to stand firm. And that doesn't mean we get angry at people and like shut them down. I think it's a time to listen. I think it's a time to empathize and sympathize with our brothers who are suffering. But that doesn't rob us of the message that has never changed. There is coming a day when our King will return and make all things right. And until that day comes, we press in and we support the incremental justice as you were talking about. But that's not ultimately the solution.
But we want Jesus. That's what it comes down to, right?
Yeah.
We want you, Lord. Yeah. In every situation, in every crisis, in every storm, we want you.
Yeah.
Even more, like that, I'm going to say one last controversial thing. In the oppression, in the abuse of power, in the difficulty, what do we want more? Do we want that to stop, or do we want more Jesus? It's not that we don't want, not that wanting this is bad, but we've got to build a family, a church in America where we want Jesus more.
Yeah.
This can stop, but Jesus, if you're not with us when it stops, it's going to start again.
Yeah.
We want you, to whatever degree we can have you, we want you. Justice is you with us. Right. That's the ultimate wrong thing made right. More than a police officer, a judge, a priest, whoever, anyone in a position of power abusing their power is inarguably wrong, and we want that to stop. But We want more than that, Lord. We want you. We want you. We want you. That is justice. The greater injustice isn't the guy abusing his power. The greater injustice is you not here. And when we have that one in right order, everything else comes into place.
That's right.
That's so good. Well, usually I say, if this touched you, go share it with your friends. But we know that this touched you and provoked your heart to think differently and act differently and live differently, according to just what Dave said, to realize that the greater injustice is that God is not with us. So share this with your friends. If you haven't seen our previous podcast, go find us on YouTube and Spotify. And again, we'll be here next Friday, 2 p.m. Central Time.
Peace.